State Board will come back to order. Colorado State Board of Education will now convene a panel discussion regarding the future of PARC in Colorado. Today, the Partnership for Assessment of Readiness for College and Careers testing regime is, despite the board's best effort in 2012 to maintain control over designing the Colorado statewide assessment, being piloted in classrooms throughout Colorado as we speak. Instead of allowing Colorado to design its own statewide assessments, through the passage of SB 12-172, the Colorado General Assembly directed this board to join as a governing member one of the two federally financed testing consortia. Following the passage of that law, this board, the commissioner, and the governor became signatories to a three-party agreement known as a Memorandum of Understanding, or MOU, with PARC. Since that time, many and vigorous questions have been raised as to the appropriateness of PARC for Colorado. Broadly stated, they may all be rolled up into one. Is PARC and all that is inherent within this massive undertaking the single best choice for the students of Colorado? We are delighted to welcome Senator Keith King, former superintendent of public schools, Lewis Palmer, Ted Bauman, principal of James Irwin Charter School, Cindy Will, Denver Public Schools Chief Academic Officer, Susanna Cordova, Bruce Hoyt of St. Charles Capital and board member of Colorado Succeeds, and Dr. Steve Jordan, president of Metropolitan State University. First, we will hear from those panelists who support PARC, followed by those who oppose PARC. Each panel will have 20 minutes to present their position. Following the panel presentations, the panelists who support PARC will have the 10 minutes in which to question the panelists who oppose PARC, and following their questioning, the panelists who oppose PARC will have 10 minutes in which to question the panelists who support PARC. Trying to get a dialogue going is what we're working on here. Following the panel discussion, the board will have 30 minutes for dialogue, questions, and discussion. So with that, I will hand the floor to the folks who are speaking in favor of PARC.
Want me to go? Okay. And make sure the microphone's working. Can everybody hear me fine?
You're live. You're very good.
All right. Thank you. Well, thank you for having me today. My name is Bruce Hoyt. I'm a founding partner of St. Charles Capital, which is an investment bank doing primarily merger and acquisition work in Denver. I'm a member of Colorado Succeeds. I'm also a Colorado native. I am a product of Colorado Public Schools and a parent of two children who went K through 12 through Colorado Public Schools. First of all, I'd like to start by congratulating the State Board and thanking you for your service, the great work you've done over the last many years, especially the incredibly hard work you've done on updating the Colorado academic standards. Having served on a board with Elaine Berman, I know how taxing public service can be. So
we do have to get that in.
Does that make us kindred spirits?
Yes, it does in many, many ways. As an employer, the work towards higher standards and aligned assessments is absolutely critical to maintaining a healthy Colorado economy. Our current trajectory, though improved from where it was, will not get us there. For example, by 2020, 74% of Colorado jobs will require some post-secondary education. Currently, only 22 of every 100 high school students end up with that credential. As a result, Colorado schools currently produce less than half the workers needed to fill the top 30 occupations, with the largest projected openings going forward. I've been in conversation with numerous CEOs, and the complaint is consistent about the lack of ability to find the highly qualified workers within this state that we need to fulfill the high job openings that we have. There are numerous economic benefits to getting there and to better preparing students in Colorado. For example, the recent study that showed that if we can increase our graduation rate from just 76% to 90%, that would mean $100 million in increased annual earnings by Colorado citizens, 850 new jobs coming to this state annually, $80 million increase in annual spending and $4.5 million in an increased tax base. This is why business cares so much about education in Colorado. I encourage you to please stay on the path towards these more rigorous assessments, and in particular, the park assessment. I understand the legitimate concerns that exist about privacy and about over-testing. These need to be addressed. However, I would argue that these solvable concerns are overwhelmed by the public good of the park assessments. In education, we know that setting high expectations is a key driver towards student success. In business, we know that it's true that you get what you measure. The work you've already done developing the Colorado Academic Standards and PARC does just that. It sets those high expectations, and then it allows us to measure what we get. It's critical that we continue on this path to improve the outcome for our students. It's critical to create the kind of accountability and transparency that these public institutions should be held to, and it's critical to support autonomy, choice, and innovation, which will improve with the park assessment. As an employer, taxpayer, parent, and education policy student, park represents a superior assessment tool. The multiple types of questions can better assess conceptual thinking and critical thinking, those skills highly valued by employers. The ability to include formative assessments are great to for parents and for teachers to improve outcomes. The more timely release of data from PARC assessment will allow school level all the way up to state policy level people to react faster to strategy and policy decisions. And most importantly, for the first time, the ability to compare the performance of Colorado students against other states would be a huge benefit. Wow, what could we do better? What are we doing worse? How can we learn from other states, districts with similar demographics to our school districts that would allow us to become better districts, to have better policies? What incredibly valuable data to have. What a flashlight to shine on the performance to help us continuously improve Colorado schools. What a valuable benchmark for parents, for teachers, and for school administrators. And what great information to continue the implementation of Senate Bill 191, the READ Act, having all this more data to be able to do a great job on implementation. PARC also strikes me as the perfect balance between our desire for local control and our need to develop a better, more robust, comparable assessment. Over 50 Colorado educators were involved in the development of PARC. Commissioner Hammond is playing a critical role on the executive committee on PARC. This is great Colorado participation in PARC, but on top of that, we get the benefit of some of the best education minds around the country from over 600 universities who've added to PARC, and some of the best K-12 minds in the other states with PARC, adding to the quality of this assessment. I'm a Colorado native. I'm very proud of Colorado, but it seems arrogant to think that we will not have a better assessment when we benefit from brilliant minds around the country and millions of dollars to supplement the work that we're doing to build the PARC assessment. By creating more rigorous standards and implementing an aligned assessment that can be compared with many other states, Colorado will boost their economy and improve student achievement. 10 years ago at our company, 75% of the transactions we worked on were Colorado-based. Today, less than half the transactions we work on are from Colorado. 10 years ago, almost everybody we would hire to join St. Charles Capital was Colorado-based. Now we're getting inundated from applications from around the country of other highly qualified potential employees. State and even national borders mean less and less in a mobile society, and we need an assessment that also reflects that kind of mobility, that kind of reach outside of the state of Colorado. I've heard a concern that some want to exceed the standards that we're setting. If this is indeed true, then I would argue that it makes even more sense for Colorado to adapt PARC and to go with PARC. Why is that? I will say because if we do indeed exceed the standards, PARC will show on a comparable basis that Colorado is one of the leading education states in the country. What will this do for us? This will allow us a valuable tool in being able to attract companies, more employers, more jobs for Colorado, and to attract students in various districts that are exceeding these results. If, as I suspect, however, that the results of PARC show that Colorado is less than exceeding the standards of this more rigorous standard, it will be an aid by shining a flashlight on those issues and helping us provide a roadmap of where we need to improve, what areas we can improve in, and how we should attack improving Colorado education. It is only by deluding ourselves that we are superior when we are indeed struggling that we can lose. PARC will prevent this from happening because the comparability with other states will not allow us to have this delusion. Standard-based education has helped us improve educational outcomes, especially for disadvantaged students. Chester Finn has recently written very eloquently on how standards have moved us forward and how assessments are critical for that. The current move towards more rigorous standards and a superior assessment will set those higher expectations, and with good data results, we know it will make a business a better business and a school a better school. Good data is timely, contextual, and actionable. PARC will help us move down that continuum on all three of those elements. We know that change is hard. We know that people react against change. But the fact of the matter is PARC has superior data, and the irony is when you have great data, it gives you the courage to make those difficult changes. Getting education right is critical to the economic vitality of the state. I'm very proud of the work that Colorado has done in education over the last 10 years to improve the education system. Experts from around the country believe that Colorado can be one of those states that proves that broad-based public education achievement gains are possible. We have a state legislature that has put partisan differences aside to pass key reform legislation. You as a state board have done incredible work on policy and standards, and the business community has come together to make education reform a top priority. Please have the courage to adapt these standards on the PARC assessment so that we can continue to improve student outcomes, increase the transparency and accountability of our K-12 system, continue to foster more choice and more innovation in our schools, and maintain the economic vitality of our beautiful state. Thank you for your time today.
Mr. Wright.
Well, good afternoon. My name is Susana Cordova, and unlike my colleague here, I'm not an elected official. I'm an educator. I'm the chief academic officer in the Denver Public Schools. I'm a DPS grad myself, and have had two children in the Denver Public Schools as well. And I very much appreciate this opportunity to share with you my perspective and the perspective of the Denver Public Schools about the benefits of participating in PARC. If you will indulge me for just a moment, I'd like to share the experience that I just came from prior to coming to this panel. I was at a community meeting at Kepner Middle School. Kepner is a school located in southwest Denver that serves a highly English learner population of about 800 students in grades 6 through 8, many of whom are very behind in their academic levels, and a school that we're currently looking at implementing new programs for. And the reason that I think that this is an important perspective is in this community meeting, we had parents who were at the table looking at the potential opportunities to have new programming coming into the building. And by far what parents are asking for, and for the most part this was a group of monolingual Spanish-speaking parents, is school programs that have higher standards, higher expectations, and give us the information about how our students are performing to meet those expectations. And I thought it was a very nice way to open up this conversation about why we believe PARC gives us that information that our parents, our students, and our teachers are requesting. When we look at the standards in PARC, in the Common Core that would be assessed by PARC, we recognize that an aligned standards and assessment system is really critical, we believe, to our success. In Denver, we've seen very high growth, but we also know that we have a long way to go to ensure that all students are truly prepared for a rigorous post-secondary experience, be that college or career. And as Bruce says, we know that virtually all employment opportunities will require some kind of post-secondary educational experience. We believe that having the information that PARC gives us will really spur the kind of innovation and dedication to high expectations that we need in our schools currently. The idea of assessing knowledge of content-rich nonfiction text, informational text, using technology to be able to assess students, we believe truly will help us both design our teaching and learning experiences, as well as understand how our students are performing with those learning experiences. For many of our students, the only opportunities that they have to access technology is in our schools. And so having an assessment that is aligned to instructional practices that get at that are very critical for us. As my colleague Bruce mentioned, we believe that it is very important to have the highest quality assessments. The idea that PARC is being developed with the input of educators from around the country, we believe gives us that opportunity for the highest quality assessments. The comparability across states, we also believe is very important. Denver is in a somewhat unique position in the state of Colorado in terms of the students that we serve, the demographics that we serve, and the intensity of urban need in our state. It's very difficult at times to find a benchmark within our state. And so having benchmarks across the country of similar districts, we believe will be incredibly helpful for us. We also believe that the college-ready focus of PARC will be an important factor for us. We know that we've improved our graduation rates. We know that we've improved our state assessment rates. And yet we also know that many, far too many of our students are graduating from our schools in need of remediation. PARC will give us the information real time along the way that will help us ensure that we are setting our standards and aligning our instructional systems in a way that ensures that more kids meet the requirements for college entrance. We think it's also very important for teachers to be able to have that real-time access to data. And the idea that the information is available much more quickly, we believe, is an important aspect of that. As I said, it's not just our parents at Kepner, but really parents across the city are very interested in having clear and timely information about the progress of their students. And the progress of their students in Denver, across the state, in comparison to across the state, and across the country as well. I think that's one of the very large benefits of that. We also believe that it's important to be able to have the opportunity to learn from other places that are doing a better job than we are with similar demographics, as well as places that are struggling and seeking out new and innovative ways to improve their data. We also believe that the idea that these are internationally benchmarked really does give our students an opportunity to enter into a global 21st century workforce. One of the things that I wanted to share was just a little bit of information about the people within our district who have participated in opportunities to give feedback into the PARC assessment. Our Director of Math and Science, Dr. Kathy Martin, is a member of the Colorado Educator Cadre and meets regularly to give advice and feedback on PARC. We have been members of the Council of Great Cities Schools, as well as the Aspen Institute, and have been able to give input at each phase of development into the PARC assessment, including from the very inception of the frameworks, the blueprints, the items. We also have members who are part of the WIDA National Consortia Board to be able to have conversations across assessments as well, so that as we're looking at assessments like the English language acquisition assessment and thinking about how it relates to PARC, that we're looking at how do we ensure that we have the appropriate technology, the appropriate approaches, and the right input into those systems as they are being developed. And within the next 4 weeks, in fact, we have coordinators from our teaching and learning department who will be heading to help develop the range finding around PARC items, where they'll actually be scoring PARC items against the rubric to give input into our ability to understand how the items and our perspective on how the items align to grade level expectations. And so it's been a great opportunity for our educators to be directly involved in informing, advising, and providing feedback into the development of the assessment. The final thing that I'd like to say is one of our shared core values in the Denver Public Schools is equity, and another one is accountability. And it strikes me that this is a very important opportunity for us in our district, as well as all of us in our state, to live out those values of equity and accountability. And when we talk about equity, we really do look at how do we ensure that we provide the resources that are necessary for all students to be able to meet high expectations. When we talk about accountability, we really think about what does it mean as a community to be co-accountable to the outcomes that we expect to see. I believe that participation in PARC truly gives us the opportunity to live out those values of equity and accountability. It gives us an opportunity to have the window into not just at our state level, but across our nation. What are the expectations, and how do we ensure that we are aligning our resources to make sure that all students, regardless of where they live, have educational experiences that give them the platform to meet those high expectations. And it lives the value of accountability in terms of our ability to say, when something meets an expectation, that it's not simply an expectation in Colorado, but it's an expectation that's benchmarked to both national and international standards. And so those are the benefits that we believe are very important and a large part of the rationale for why we think it's important to participate in PARC. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Jordan?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Stephen Jordan. I'm president of Metropolitan State University of Denver. And let me apologize at the beginning. I'm from higher education, and we have a whole different set of language than you do, even though we're all in the same business. So if I use some terms that conflict with your terms, I apologize at the front end. And because I don't know the audience, I just would be interested, how many of the people in this room actually got your high school diploma in Colorado? Less than half. Which I think speaks to Bruce's point about this question about net importation. So I'd like to begin by saying, first of all, I applaud you, Mr. Chairman, for putting this issue on the table. I don't know that there's a more important question that is facing the nation today than our ability to compete through the educational attainment of our children. And I think the question that you put on the table puts front and center the issue of what is a state's responsibility when you are a member of a union of republics. We're a republic in this state. That's what we are. All of our states are republics. But we have coalesced as a union. And the question is, in order to solve the nation's single most pressing question, what is our responsibility as a state to assist in helping to do that? And I think this conversation is an important part of how we begin to understand that responsibility. You know, as a college president, I actually have to deal with the question of comparing the ability of students' performance who matriculate into our university from other states. And while 97% of the students at my university are, quote, residents of the state of Colorado, almost half of them actually have come from other states and have gotten their residency, have brought their high school diploma from some other place. So in this country, for years, the way we made decisions about higher education admission was on the basis of the Carnegie Unit, which created the most portable system of assessment of what students know, and the ACT and SAT scores. And ever since, K-12 throughout the country has begun this conversation way ahead of higher ed about outcomes, about trying to understand what it is that students should know and be able to demonstrate as they leave their schools. We in higher education have been pressed to rethink the basis upon which we choose to admit students, not only in our own states, but from other states. And what we have essentially been asked on a national basis is to say that we should accept the standards that are established by states on an outcomes basis as saying that that student is capable of doing college-level work. Because let's be clear, all the ACT measures, it doesn't actually measure what students know. It measures a belief of what the student, whether the student will be successful in their first freshman year of college. That's all it measures. It doesn't measure in their knowledge base. It measures whether they will be successful or not in their first year. So we have been pressed to think about moving to what you're doing. And the question is, how difficult will it be for us in higher education, and not only for us, but for students in Colorado who choose to go to other states, to be in a position of saying that university is going to make a decision, hopefully in my favor, on the basis of whether our state assessment matches up with the state assessment in Indiana, matches up with Massachusetts, matches up with California, matches up with the state of Washington, because our students are applying to all those states. One of the single biggest thing going on in Colorado today is the net exportation of our brightest students to other states, and they are competing. And the question is, how will they be able to compete based upon what we will choose to participate in for the assessment process for students in Colorado? So I believe that we're in a better position if we share the goals of higher standards with other states, that we have the opportunity to be even more influential leader in the development of rigorous assessment standards, but quite frankly, we have to be at the table. And for me, and it goes back to this question about what does it mean to be a state in a union of republics, it's about leadership. It's about what are we prepared to do in our union to help to assure that our country has the strongest standards and the most highly educated students in the world today. Let me move to another area. Ms. Goff was a participant with me this past year in about a 7-month study session on licensure for teachers. Some good days and bad days in some of those meetings. But one of the things that is very important, we need to remember that 50% of the teachers who are licensed in teaching in the state of Colorado today did not get their degree in Colorado, either their high school diploma or their college degree. Now, we at Metro are spending a lot of time in our curriculum, as are our sister institutions in Colorado, making sure that our teacher preparation students understand what the standards are in Colorado, how to do individualized instructions for students, to prepare them to meet the outcomes that you are setting, and to demonstrate those outcomes in the tests that Colorado uses for demonstration of that. One of the issues that we raised, and I think President Norton and I were united in this, is that the truth of it is that we admit all of those other 50% on the basis of an interstate compact agreement without a real knowledge about what are they teaching to, what standards have they chosen, and are they really capable of entering our classrooms today and demonstrating the ability to accomplish the outcomes that you are asking them to do and the measures that they will have to be able to have their students demonstrate. I think this is a critical issue that this board needs to take into consideration. In my view, is participation in the park assures that not only teacher education programs of Colorado, but teacher education programs throughout the nation will be teaching to the same set of expected outcomes and will be prepared to enter the classrooms, and we have a vested interest in that outcome in a very, very significant way. I think it was well covered in terms of this notion about our being a net importer of talent. We've seen it here in this room that clearly a majority of the people in this room did not get their education, their primary education in the state of Colorado, and yet that sets the pattern for their ability to be lifelong learners. Because there's no question that your expectation when they leave and with a high school diploma is that they will have a set of skills that will allow them to continue pursuing learning throughout their lives. And I believe that participation in a nationally based program will help to assure that our students will be competing to the highest standards and will recognize that they are capable of competing against kids from Massachusetts and California and Washington and all the other states. And finally, you know, it strikes me that there is also, it was been mentioned actually earlier, that I spend a lot of time at the Capitol. It's a little bit about the money. And it's my understanding that that we anticipate that it will cost $10 to $12 million for us as a state to do these assessments. More. Without a clear understanding of whether that $10 to $12 million will actually accomplish the job or not. I don't know how we think we can be assured that we will have a standard that will meet those expectations in the timelines required with that expenditure when we're competing against two large national pools which have $350 million available to them to develop assessment tools. Why wouldn't Colorado want to spend that $10 million in the classroom on teachers, on the experience that students are having, rather than on the assessments when we can take advantage of a much larger pool of funds along with our colleagues from other states? Thank you very much.
Thank you. So we'll move at this point to this panel, and you've organized yourself, and please proceed.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Can you hear me?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Good afternoon. My name is Cindy Will. I'm the principal of James Irwin Charter Academy, and I too want to join the echo of thanking you for this wonderful opportunity to talk about such a critical issue. It's transformative. It's going to last. The decisions here will affect Colorado for generations. I will be talking about my reasons for why PARC has got to go. One of our education presidents, Thomas Jefferson, said, if it is believed that these elementary schools will be better managed by the governor and council or any other general authority of the government than by parents within each ward, it is a belief against all experience. We have had more than 200 years of experience to confirm Jefferson's wisdom that parents do know better than Uncle Sam about their children's education. And I dare say that the founders were not as interested in preparing students for an 18th century global economy, and yet we have documentation that in the early years of our country, the literacy rates were close to 100%. We don't fear assessments. We don't fear accountability. In fact, strong voices of opposition from school leaders to the PARC tests are among the state's top performers. Our schools consistently meet or exceed the state requirements for proficient performance school ratings, and it cuts across both political parties. This is not a Republican issue. It is not a Democrat issue. It is a kid issue. Here are my top 10 reasons for why PARC has got to go. Number 10, PARC and the new series of tests require students to lose tons of instructional time. TCAP tests for grades 3 through 5 are completed February and March, a total of 3 to 4 weeks. The new series of tests for grades 3 to 5 will occur January, March, April, and May. We're talking a total of 8 to 4 weeks. Therefore, we have about doubled our testing requirement with this new series of tests. Number 9, reason why PARC has got to go. PARC's harmful screen time. A screen, S-C-R-E-E-N. According to the American Academy of Pediatrics, the use of technology for children ages 6 to 12 is detrimental to child development and learning. There are studies that are showing that children and teens between the ages of 6 to 12 should engage in no more than 1 to 2 hours a day, or it can lead to attention problems. Children who can't pay attention can't learn. Children also will have school difficulties when they exceed screen time. There's also studies that are showing sleep and eating disorders and even contributions to obesity with extensive screen time. In fact, children who engage more than 1 to 2 hours a day of technology have a 60% increase in psychological disorders, according to a Bristol University 2010 study. Children are presently using 4 to 5 times that amount. of technology recommended by pediatric experts, according to Pagani 2010 study. Does Park want to contribute to this? Number eight reason why Park has got to go. The Park tests lack growth data. Colorado's hard-earned TCAP growth data is void. We lose the continuation of our growth charts due to the Park tests. The growth charts won't coordinate with our Park data. Number seven, Park's myth of rigor. Tests are not rigorous. They're vague. They're confusing. They're not coherent. The tests lack logical sequencing, and they promote guessing, all under the guise of critical thinking skills. In fact, we've all been warned to expect significant drops in our scores. Don't be fooled. It's not because of rigor. It's because of confusion. Number six, why Park has got to go. The Park tests lack reliability. The reliable tests are closely aligned to instruction. For instance, if a student is taught with paper and pencil, they need to be tested with paper and pencil. If they are taught paper and pencil and tested with a computer, we won't have reliable data. We have not evolved as a society that each child yet can afford their own computer. Therefore, most students are still taught with paper and pencil. When teaching and testing are in the same method, the test results are more highly reliable. What good is a fast turnaround in data if the data is not reliable? Number five, Park's got to go. The Park's flaws follow all stakeholders. The tests have huge impacts on schools, teachers, and students. The school's accreditation is determined from Park scores. The teacher's evaluation rubrics link 50% of student achievement, including the Park unreliable data. The student's Park scores live on in a data pipeline for years to come. Number four, why Park has got to go. The Park tests promote cursive illiteracy. The Park tests require curricular switches. Schools are pressured to switch instruction from cursive lessons to keyboard lessons. Schools don't have time to teach both. Cursive and keyboarding wins. It's the test. I was featured on an NPR Wisconsin radio program, and they were talking about for cursive, the elimination. It's an important topic for me, and they were highlighting that 40 out of 50 states in July 2010, at the time of this program, 40 out of 50 states were eliminating cursive and handwriting. They didn't have time for it. Because of the new testing emphasis on keyboarding proficiency, the impact on our citizenry, when students become cursive illiterate, they can't read, and I'm hearing from professors, they can't write or read the professor's writing. Guess what? They can't read historical documents like the Declaration of Independence. It's in cursive. Remember, a slow handwriting results from inadequate teaching of letter formation. And this has an impact in every subject and is the leading cause of illiteracy. That's from a Rowan study, 2010. So, when we eliminate cursive lessons and we promote a new form of illiteracy, cursive illiteracy, we're spelling trouble. Number three, why Park has got to go. Park eliminates school choice. The Park tests and curriculum demand a one-size-fits-all approach. There's no need for charter schools. Charter schools are charged to be incubators of innovation. The national tests and curriculum extinguish innovation, and they abolish distinctions of schools. Gone are the innovative models. Gone language immersion. Gone early colleges. Sorry, Keith. Gone direct instruction. Gone Montessori, STEM, IB, classical, core knowledge, and the list goes on. Number two, why Park has got to go. Park tests drive instruction. The CSAP, TCAP test did not do this. If the schools and students want to do well on the national tests, they must use an aligned national curriculum. And my number one reason why PARC has got to go, drum roll, is the PARC tests, thank you, the PARC tests minimize local control and parental empowerment. Parents lose their voice in what their child is being taught and tested. Children enrolled in public education are not children of the state. They are children of their parents who fund the educational system. Education needs to be accountable to the parents, not parents accountable to the state. Let's follow Jefferson's advice and withdraw from the PARC tests in exchange for our own Colorado homegrown state tests. Colorado deserves better. PARC has got to go. It's as simple as ABC, achieving the best for Colorado's children. Thank you.
Thanks, Cindy. I wish I had prepared something as dramatic as you have. My name is Ted Blyman, and I'm from Lewis Palmer School District 38. I don't know if you know about Lewis Palmer School District 38, and I won't bore you with the details, but we are one of your top performing school districts in the state of Colorado. And we have been since I started in that district in 1988. I retired in 2003 as superintendent of Lewis Palmer. Came back in 2010 and 11 as a mayor, and I'm back again this year, starting in January to the end of the school year as an interim. And so I wanted to give you my perspective of how PARC has changed the dynamics of our school district. It bothers me that this PARC, this partnership, I don't see where the word partnership fits into our school district. This partnership for assessment for readiness for college and careers. PARC is a huge consortium. They've subcontracted with Pearson, who has subcontracted with Educational Testing Services, who have subcontracted to others to develop these online assessments. In my mind, they're way too big, they're too far away, especially from District 38. I feel like we're a small fish in a big pond, and they don't know our district. I don't believe they've taken the time to get to know us as individual school districts in Colorado. We're unique. Their response to our concerns is non-existent. I've watched, but our district volunteered to pilot PARC because that's what we are. We want to do the best we can for our kids. Makes sense. They shouldn't be at a disadvantage. And every time we call Pearson or whoever they send us to, we get no response. The response is no reason. They don't really care about District 38. I think all they care about is the money that they've gotten to be part of this consortium and what we're paying them as a state of Colorado to get this done. That bothers me because that could be going into our school system. Their system is designed by computer-based assessment company experts. They're not student or user-friendly, either one. They're designed by adults who think as adults but don't think as school kids. I believe that this consortium should serve at the pleasure of the state of Colorado, not the other way around. And it seems like they're driving us instead of us telling them what they need to be doing for us. Things as important as what you're about to decide to do with education with such widespread ramifications can't and should not be rushed. And we shouldn't sacrifice quality for speed. And I think, in my estimation, having been in education for 41 years, that's what has been happening the last couple of years. As superintendent in a small school district, I used to feel I could be an educational leader. I used to feel I could be an instructional leader for the district. That's what I signed up for as a superintendent. Now I kind of feel like I'm a manager. That bothers me. And I'm trying to see how we can put systems in place so that our kids can do as well as possible in PARC assessments. I think we have lost instructional time for testing time. We've lost instructional focus for testing focus. We've lost teaching time for testing time. My background is in curriculum and instruction professional development. Who has time to do that anymore? Not me. Used to be that Colorado trusted us as professionals, superintendents, administrators to do the right things for our kids. I don't know what has happened to that. Working with the Colorado Department of Education, they trusted us to make those good decisions for kids. I feel like they don't trust me anymore. And that's why I'm retiring for good, actually, to be quite honest with you. I'm done with this. Because I don't want to be a manager, and you know, someone who listens to me. I might not be the smartest person in the room, but I have a lot of good sense and wisdom when it comes to instructing kids. Park doesn't do that for me. I'd like to see Park discontinued. We as a district have not all the assessments that we use. We don't use one measure. I don't need Park to tell me how well our kids are doing. I don't need Park to tell me how well our kids compare nationally. Understood that we use the ACT. Our kids do very well in the ACT. It's a national comparison. Colleges are using it. We use the NWA, which is the Northwest Education Association. We use the DIBBS, the DIMAGO. I won't go into all those acronyms. But those all give us a national comparison. We don't need anymore. And I can only speak for our district, but I bet there are a lot of superintendents who feel just like I do. And some of them that I've talked to recently are saying, I can hardly wait till I'm done with this job. Let me tell you what really bugs me about Park. The amount of time that has been taken for student testing, it has really interrupted our instructional time. As I talk to teachers, as I talk to students who understand what I'm talking about, as I talk to parents, they feel like we have lost that creativity and innovation that used to be a landmark of Lewis Palmer School District 38. And teachers feel like they really have blinders. And I'm trying to tell my teachers, don't worry about Park. We're not going to worry about that. Let's teach like we know how to teach. If Park were gone, we wouldn't miss it at all. Well, the only thing we would miss maybe is the amount of money I'm having to spend to do Park. I can use that money in a different way. Testing room is only 4 weeks long. We've suggested some things to Park. Actually, for us, it's only 3 weeks because one of those weeks is spring break. We have a Pikes Peak Superintendent's Association. We all agreed to a spring break. So we're cut down to 3 weeks, totally interrupts our instructional day and our instructional schedule. Just bugs me to death that that happens. The amount of people that I need to hire additionally beyond my school employees to make Park work just in my two pilot schools this year is horrendous. I've hired 22 additional people who are not school employees, who know technology, who can come in and help us go from school to school. We don't have the technology to handle this. We're already 4 million dollars behind because of some of the cuts and rescissions we've had. I don't have the money to have all these technology labs and all that kind of thing. Teacher training is just incredible. We have to train not only in the testing coordinator in each building. That testing coordinator needs to go back to the teachers, take teachers out of the classroom, get subs for those teachers, train all of them to do this testing assessment, and that's very interruptive too. That's just not the way the Lewis Palmer School District operates. And I'm trying to resist it as much as I can. Park is, here's another thing, bugs me about it. They're run by Pearson, Park's run by Pearson, and they've had an independent company called Java. I don't know if you know what Java is. They're sort of the security part in this. And they're less friendly than Pearson. So anytime we have a problem, they don't get back to us. They say thank you for sharing. They're continually sending updates that don't. It's just ridiculous what happens with some of those kinds of things. They don't get back to us in a timely manner. The directions on Park, and I don't know if any of you have the opportunity to go watch a Park pilot. I'd suggest you do that. It would be great for you to see what kids and teachers and proctors are struggling with. Some of the instructions in these park things are way too high for particularly our younger kids. Do I have time to give them an example?
Absolutely.
This is off a fourth grade test. The instructions say, and the kids read this aloud with their teachers, use of standard language conventions when writing answers to the constructed response prompts. And the fourth grader goes, what? These tests are not written for grade level kids. They're written by adults who think kids understand adult language. There's no way some of those kids are going to do that. Many of our kids now are noticing they're used to the texting and the touchpad. You know how that works? Well, when you test online, you can't test that way. You have to use a mouse. Kids sometimes have to scroll down 1, 2, and 3 screens to be able to answer some of the questions. So they're continually having to go back and forth between screens. Supposedly Park is going to fix, or Pearson, whoever, is going to fix the touch thing, and you can do that. It just costs me to do it. We can't do that. Please understand, I'm not a complainer. I'm really not. And I'm not a griper. Never operated that way. We've always complied with what the Colorado Department of Education has asked us to do. We will do so if Park continues. I don't like the fact that our kids are suffering for adult decisions. So I guess to summarize, I'm concerned about the testing time, the amount of people it takes, the amount of technology and money it takes, and the sacrifice that we're having to make to participate in this park assessment. Here's my advice to you, and I'm speaking from my district, just leave us alone. We're going to be just fine. And so I appreciate your time today, and I've probably taken a little more time, Keith.
Senator King.
Thank you. Well, I've had two great speakers in front of me, so I'll try and be a little more to the point and maybe just talk about some of the interests that I have at the school level and also when I was in the legislature. Education to me is a lot about balance and finding the appropriate balance to how we create academic excellence and achievement and how we create accountability and how we create checks and balances in a system to get what we need to get out of the system for our kids. And to me, what is happening with Park and all the assessments that are especially coming into the high schools of this state, we are absolutely going backwards. And the reason I think we're going backwards is because my efforts that I've had the last 7 years with Colorado Springs Early Colleges. And if you saw the Gazette had an article about the most recent announcements about how concurrent enrollment is going up in Colorado and how that is increasing, and it's increasing across both charter schools and district schools across the state of Colorado. That, to me, talks about innovation. That talks to me about giving students opportunity to accomplish what they want to accomplish as opposed to benchmarking them against some national standard that is low and, frankly, incomplete in what it takes to be successful in college. So I think what we have lost in the balance between a system analysis and giving students opportunity is we are tying down students to a process that is absolutely taking away the innovation that we can do with them in schools. So let me tell you why I think the balance is on the process is hurting our outcomes. We have students, in fact, I don't know if you lived in the metro area of Denver last night and watched Fox 31, you saw a student that was going to Colorado Springs Early College, Noah Dome. We're opening a new school in Parker, and he was talking about the fact that he's graduating from high school this year with a bachelor's degree. And he has accomplished something that's now been accomplished twice at our schools. We have a standard that says the kids can go as far as they want to go, and what happens to when you start creating all the so-called standards and the areas of testing those standards, you start letting the focus come down on very specific issues that are actually something that they have accomplished years ago. And so just think about it in yourself. If I went back and took an Algebra 2 test without studying up and doing some work and trying to do better on it and think about it a little bit, I'd bomb it. And so what happens to these kids, a lot of the kids, that, and we have seen it happen, they're into calculus and different things that they go on, and they go back and they're taking tests that they have taken years ago, and they don't feel invested in it. They don't feel like it makes any difference in their lives. They don't see any reason to do it, and so they don't work at it. And I have had this comment come to me many times from the parents of the kids at our school, because they say, our kids are already beyond this. Our kids are already into college-level work. They are proving they can do it. They are proving that they can accomplish it. And we are going backwards to have them test, and why do they see a reason to test? In fact, one mother was in my office the other week, and she says, I guess if we're going to go backwards and take these tests, I got to go back and to go back to almost like elementary work and try and refresh them, because these kids have gone beyond that. So I think we have lost the prize of what we are trying to do with K-12 education, and that is prepare kids for college and for post-secondary and workforce readiness. And I think that is one thing that these tests at the high school level especially do not accomplish. So for me, the reality of the diagnostic aspect, the aspect that we are supposed to test them on certain areas that are going to measure their success in being ready to go on to a career is absolutely backwards. We guarantee that every one of our kids will graduate from a high school without remediation. And we let them take the Accuplacer test to prove that they can do that. And they understand that. They buy into that. They have a reason to do that. So let's talk I'll just talk a little bit about the system and what I did with Senator Hudak in trying to measure the system and create some legitimate measurement with 163 with our school improvement plans. We basically looked at four categories. We looked at student achievement, growth, achievement gaps, and post-secondary and workforce readiness. And I think what we were trying to accomplish with that bill was give some degree of system analysis about how well we were preparing kids to go on to what would happen to them after high school. I think, and now having been away from that legislation for several years, we need to go back and totally redo the post-secondary and workforce readiness indicators of that act. It's insignificant. I think what we would be much better off to do is talk more about outcomes. Endorsed diplomas, for example. How many kids are getting an endorsed diploma out of the school? How many kids are actually accomplishing concurrent enrollment and proving academically that they can go on to something more than what Park even asked for them? And so I think the post-secondary workforce readiness needs to be changed. I think when I worked so hard to try and do academic growth and give us an opportunity to measure that opportunity for growth in the system, and I think the continuity that is lost by going to Park is going to damage the ability to do that, and will also make it tough. And I think the other issue that I think the Park assessment will hurt is the kids that are the low achievers, and especially the thing that I wanted to work a lot on when I was in this legislature was minorities, and especially boys, and how that impacts their ability to find an assessment that works for them and motivates them to accomplish something that would be meaningful. So I don't see Park as a good assessment at all for getting ready for going on to post-secondary college and careers. I think that we have a lot of opportunity to do better. And I will just talk about one final thing that Ted talked about also, and that's the allocation of resources. We are being required at our schools, really, to almost hire a testing coordinator. We are spending thousands, literally thousands of dollars trying to have enough computers to do this assessment so it doesn't absolutely destroy our school year and with the testing that we are doing. And we're taking away valuable dollars for an assessment tool that, frankly, I don't think is talking enough about outcomes but talking about process and inputs. And so I think this, for me, is taking our students backwards. And I'll just close with this. We have decided not to disrupt our kids' college education at our school by deciding to bring Park in during their week of finals that they are taking at the college level. So we're going to let them take it on Saturday because the kids care more about doing well on their finals at their school than they care about the park assessment. And I think we will definitely see terrible scores as a result of some of the efforts that we're doing because the kids have already, many of them, exceeded and excel beyond what they'll be tested for in that. Thank you.
So now we'll watch the time a little more closely on this. Approximately 10. Yeah, we were very generous. Both of you ran over, but the comments were valuable, so we were letting you go. 10 minutes for you folks to ask questions to this panel. The idea is to kind of get a dialogue. It's not necessarily a cross-examination, and then we'll take 10 minutes following that for them to ask questions of you. So if you have questions that... And if this goes nowhere, if this lays an egg, that's fine. Jump in because I know we have plenty of questions.
Do they get to start or do we?
They get to start with questions and you'll be responding. That's kind of the way we'd structured it. But.
I'm very interested in this concept that PARC in some way will curb innovation. And let me give a little context for my question. In the Denver Public Schools, we very much believe in choice and innovation. We have a varied portfolio of schools. All of our schools have been truly digging into the Colorado academic standards, including in ELA and mathematics as manifested through the Common Core. Schools as diverse as the Denver Green School, Grant Beacon, which is a personalized learning school using lots of technology to help students master the standards, traditional schools, and we're not hearing from our school partners that in any way are the standards or the approaches to the assessments limiting their ability to be innovative. And so I'm curious to hear a little bit more of the manner in which you feel like it, you know, our Montessori, we have Montessori schools, we have all of the kinds of schools that you mentioned we have in our district, and we are not hearing back, with exceptions around the amount of testing time, concerns that the standards or the assessments are going to limit their ability to be innovative.
So the effect of PARC and limitation of innovation within schools. Good question.
Well, since I brought up the idea of creativity and innovation, what I'll say to you in my district is any time that we have a school willing to do the testing, everything else in terms of being innovative and creative in a way to utilize technology for instruction is shut down. I don't know what your assessment, what your capability is in the area of technology or DPS, but in others it's very slim and very limited. We have some schools that don't have a technology lab, so we're able to put together these mobile units to take to each school with this team of people. And these aren't even new things. These are old things that we've refurbished because we don't have the money to buy new stuff. And as that happens, and PARC eventually is going to have a beginning year, mid-year, and end-of-year kind of testing, anytime we do anything in any of our schools in that way, it shuts everything down in terms of utilizing technology.
I think it's a really good question, and I can see where there might be a little bit of, why? That's a wild statement. We've had state assessments for a long time, and we're not hearing that before. And it's true. We're in a new world. TCAP, as I mentioned, did not drive instruction. That's the difference, and that's why those of us who don't normally complain are here, because this is different. It's a total game changer. This, if you want to do well on these national tests, you've got to play the game, and you've got to have the curriculum that is aligned. That's why Saxon is now aligned. That's why Core Knowledge got that stamp and seal that they are aligned, so people will still use them. The curriculum is all changed in order so kids will be set up to do well on the national test. Before, it was not that case, and it was not that way. And Keith hit it when he said, this is not an outcome-based assessment. It's process-oriented. A lot of those innovative models I told you when I listed in my list when I was going through them, they're not so necessarily involved in process. Some of those are great books. You know the rule. We don't get to read the whole book now. We get to read informational texts. We get to read manuals. We only get to read an excerpt of a novel. We don't get to read the whole novel. This has big curricular changes up and down the board.
I'll just tell you one way it's hurting innovation at Colorado Springs Early Colleges, and it's hurting it this year because we give the kids a $4,200 voucher toward their college education. And we wanted to take that up this year to keep it at the same ratio that the PPR is going up. It's going up a couple hundred bucks. And so we wanted to take that up and let the kids, because college tuition, sorry, Dr. Jordan, is just outpacing inflation. And so we're having a hard time keeping up. We are instead having to keep the voucher the same this year because we have extra investment required for the testing, the computers, the extra bandwidth, all the issues that are associated with this testing that is being put on us. And so it's not driving innovation at all in our school. It's actually taking us backwards and we're not able to enhance our kids' opportunities for what we're trying to do with them at all because of this.
Okay. And how are we doing on time?
You're investing more in your kids' college education than the state of Colorado is, since they only give me $2,300.
So. We have some kids at your school.
Okay. Other questions?
I would be interested in their thoughts about where they see higher education going in terms of the ability to make these kind of portable across nation decisions about preparation of individuals for admission to do college level work if we're going to have 50 different assessment tools?
I need clarification. Maybe they understand. I don't understand 50 assessments. Well, I think we're doing fine with what we have.
If each state was to say, sorry, I'm not interested in partnering for the greater good, we're going to have our own assessment tool. So on what basis then will we create the kind of portability that we think is so critical for higher education in our country? The ability of Colorado kids to go to California.
Yeah, okay.
Wisconsin kids to come here.
Dr. Jordan, I would respond in this way, and I'm only speaking for Lewis Pond School District 38. 88% of our students go to college. And I would say probably at least a quarter to a third of those students go out of state. We've not ever had a problem with a student going to Duke, Harvard, Princeton, Yale, Stanford, Northwestern, you name the college, Drake, any of those, where they've learned about assessment. Of course, all that assessment data doesn't go in the transcript. The ACT does. If they take the SAT, it does. Our kids do very well in those. And I understand what you're saying about the ACT's not an achievement score or an aptitude test. But we've done a lot with that. And that is a national measure for us that really works for us in terms of our students being able to go to any college, really anywhere in the world, actually.
Yeah, and, you know, I applaud the panelists because there's a little bit of what I would call Colorado exceptionalism on that end of the table in terms of their commitment to their young people going to post-secondary. But the truth of it is, Colorado leads the nation in the educational attainment gap of its largest majority and its largest minority. We rank something like 43rd in the country in educational attainment of students of color. We rank something like 36th in the nation in terms of our own kids actually going and getting a college degree across all populations. So that exceptionalism exists in your schools, but it clearly doesn't exist in the state of Colorado.
And you think Park's going to fix that?
Well, I think at least it helps to begin to set a standard and an expectation for all students about their what it needs to be, takes to be successful.
Let me ask you a question. You said it's going to take $10 to $20 million to do our own assessment if we get rid of Park.
That's what I was told is the estimate for it.
I'm not sure about that. There are other states who've done away with Park or doing away with it, Utah, for example. And I think there's a person, we have some geniuses in this state who are geniuses in assessment. Is anyone else here?
He's hiding.
Where is he? Where's Elliot?
Oh, he was there. Maybe he left.
Is he gone?
He heard you were going to call him a genius.
and he works for the Colorado Department of Education. I think I have a genius in our district, Dr. Larry Benton. We've got folks in this state who can rate those things to our standards, to our kids, regardless of whether they're in an exceptional school district or a low-performing school district. I think we have the capability to do that on our own.
Dr. Jordan, I'd like to say thank you for the compliment about Colorado exceptionalism, and I'd like to take that a little further. That, yes, we're talking today on behalf of Colorado, but I do believe that these principles are so sterling that they belong to our whole country. I believe in American exceptionalism also, and the same things that are true for America are for Colorado are also true for our whole country.
So, and I, go ahead, Dr. Jordan.
Sure, I accept that premise. I worry greatly that the data shows that American exceptionalism is declining. The reality is our students don't compete on an international basis and keep falling farther and farther behind. And I at least would make the premise, whether we like it or not, that they're falling farther and farther behind in against systems in which there is a national perspective about what the outcomes ought to be for children in those countries.
Sure. So at this juncture, we're going to offer an opportunity for you folks to ask questions of this panel. This panel gets kind of the final word, if you will, and then we actually, since we're the elected panel, we get the final word. So.
Well, just one question that I would like to ask all of our kids, regardless of whether they're minorities or whether they're not minorities, are guaranteed the same opportunity, and that is to graduate from high school without remediation and take college-level courses. And I think what we have done, and especially to our minority kids, and Dr. Jordan, maybe you can respond to this, I don't think we've held enough opportunity for them to have to see what they can accomplish, and the expectations with Park don't really inspire them to try and go on to college because the system is not challenging them and individualizing them enough, and we're becoming way too much oriented on how the system compares nationally as opposed to trying to lift every individual kid and every student. So I would just be interested in how you think we can get individual students to be excited, especially the minority students in the system that we have with us.
Thank you. You know, I don't know of any test that the test itself is going to excite kids about learning. And I will tell you from my own experience at my university and what I'm hearing from all of you say, to me, kids get excited because they have the right kinds of teachers and they have the right kinds of support services in there. And my concern about in general about students of color, and certainly the students in my institution, is that they have much less access to those services and to those quality teachers because of the funding levels of their districts, or in my case, my kids don't have the access to the levels of support services because we have one half the funding that every other institution has. I think that's what excites them. What happens in the classroom, the support services they get, the kind of environment that's created. The test is a measure of what comes out of that. The test itself isn't going to create the excitement.
And if I can just add on to that, certainly this is a perspective for my district, and I'm in no way trying to claim that this is a perspective that everyone shares. With our work currently with the EPATS, the opportunities to look at the online and testing environment, our early Park pilot work, definitely there have been glitches, like many of the things that you've shared around the Java updating and our ability to implement on large scale the setup conditions. Lots of those aspects have been challenging. I will tell you they have been more challenging to the adults than they have been to our students. In fact, the reaction from our students has been very positive to the online environment. Many of our students find the opportunity to engage with technology to be exciting, interactive. The idea that it's not simply replacing multiple choice online with radio buttons, but actually the drag and drop. Kids are much more engaged. We're seeing that's the feedback that we're getting from our early piloting from our students in our district.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, that's right. I was just going to throw in that the data does show for poor minority kids that under standard-based forms, they've advanced 1 to 2 grade levels further. So this is, and moving forward, showing that standard-based reform does work for these kids, and then setting even higher expectations and an assessment aligned to those expectations is only going to accelerate that growth and help close the achievement gap.
Mr. Hoyt, I guess it's not so much a question as a comment. You talked about how the state legislators have been bipartisan in doing this, but Other than Lynn Stevens, I have not seen one state representative come to Lewis Pond School District 38 to see what the impact of PARC could be on our school district. I think that's a disservice to the whole state if those state legislators have not gone out to see or even tried to take the test. Paul Lundin has come to our district on several occasions, and I appreciate that because he's said, tell me about PARC, how does it impact you, what are the advantages, what are the disadvantages. I don't see the state legislators doing that. And here again, I think we have adults making decisions that are going to impact kids, and they really don't have a sense for what that impact's going to look like.
I have a question for you. Okay. Are any of you aware of Amanda Ripley's best-selling book about the smartest kids in the world? Okay. She's been on this tour, public speaking around the nation, and most recently was here in February in Denver. And she has a book titled The Smartest Kids in the World. And she's been to the country. She's interviewed kids who have been there and been educated there. And the outcome that she's come up with is that the best performing countries have two things in common. They have low-tech classrooms, and they have much less testing. They can't believe what we have here in America if they're exchange students. They just can't believe it. And I'm wondering, and she has this really well documented. She's a journalist by trade, and so she's really dotted her I and crossed her T, and she was actually seeing this as an experiment. She didn't really see what the outcomes were, but she wanted to go, you know, education is a big deal in America. What are they doing in these other countries? So my question is, with that type of research and that type of anecdotal information and hard studies that she has done, it makes me wonder, how do we justify such a burdensome system with this new series of tests as a key to improving American education, and yet we've never seen it demonstrated anywhere in the world?
So first of all, I guess I would say, I think there's a fair question about the technology component, okay? But what I did not hear you say is you did not say that she said they didn't have a national set of outcome standards.
Well, where
she did not say that. She said that it may have been administered differently and it may not be as burdensome, but she didn't say that they didn't have an expectation about a national set of outcomes. And I think that's why I think it's so important to be at the table.
Yeah.
It may be that Colorado feels vehemently about the question about how they're moving to administer it. And I think that's a fair question to talk about.
Yeah.
But do you want to really walk away from the question about what it is our students ought to know, not just in Colorado, but throughout the whole country, since from this room alone, we see how many people are going to come here?
Well, you have just found the answer that I think everybody in this room, wherever we're sitting, we all have in common. We like standards. That is not the controversial issue today. The issue today is the PARC assessment that is a computerized assessment for young kids. And so I agree with you, Dr. Jordan. We need to know what we're teaching and why we're teaching it for standards. And this is what her outcome was. And if you haven't and you think the title sounds interesting, it's called The Smartest Kids in the World and the Best Performing Countries. Two things they have in common. Low-tech classrooms, and significantly less testing than what we do in America.
So, we have about 90 seconds left. If you'd like to ask another question, it had better be a yes or no question. With that, we will move to the panel, because I'm sure we have all sorts of questions. I'd like to limit us. We're already over on time, and I don't know how the panelists are doing on their time. We're pushing up against the time frame we'd given you. Let me ask forbearance. Are we okay to run another 30 minutes? Are we okay? Okay. So let's try and limit. We're going to go down the board here, one apiece.
Well, I just want a protocol. Question, I thought this whole thing was an hour and a half. Is it 2 hours? I thought it was going to end at 3.
What? Do you want it to end right now?
Well, I just know I informed
that's what
these
I'm asking.
Three panelists.
Yeah. That's what you just asked. That's what you just
did
asked.
You just ask him if that was okay.
Yeah.
I guess I was hoping what end of three.
So what are we going on?
Why don't we start going on that for once?
Questions, if you folks have a question, whatever. let's start with questions, and we can move to comments before, you know, in the next section. So if you have questions of the panel, I know I've got dozens. I could spend a couple hours here because it's very enriching to me. But I will let my colleagues go first. Marcia?
Oh, I thought... Actually, I don't have very many questions. I've got some comments. So
if other
people have questions, let's get those out of the way first.
Lynn, do you have questions?
Well, I must have that expectant look in
you
my
do.
Eye.
Yeah, we always expect you to have a question.
I guess I'd like to address this to Susanna Cordova, because she's kind of on the ground and working in classrooms and in a very large urban district. There were a number of statements made, particularly by, I think, Cindy, but also by Ted as the superintendent, pertaining to the implementation of PARC, screen time, a whole bunch of things. Can you respond to any of that? I mean, you did comment on the fact that the students seem to... you're getting good feedback from the students, and some of the issues are more adult-oriented, but if you can comment on some of these, the growth data, that this doesn't allow for growth data.
Sure. Yeah, and let me put a little bit of context that I think is helpful. So in the Denver Public Schools, obviously we have a very diverse demographic. We have students who are going home where every person in the house has a mobile device and Wi-Fi connectivity. And then we have lots of kids who maybe the only kind of opportunity for technology in the home is some sort of mobile telephone, perhaps with data, but frequently not. And so it really does. And children who go into homes where there is no technology whatsoever, and the only access they have to technology will be in a public library or at school. So we have a very, very wide spectrum of the kinds of experiences that our students come into our schools with. We have been very fortunate to have support from our voters in terms of providing us with funding to purchase both ongoing software as well as hardware to make sure that we can bridge that digital divide. We actually have more concerns about lack of access to quality experiences with technology for our students than too much screen time, in all transparency. We recognize that there is no one, any place in the United States who's going to go into a workforce where there's not some need for technology. A very good friend of mine is a mechanic for the city of Westminster working in the fire department. Everything is computerized. All work on fire trucks is through computers, through manuals, through that kind of work. And so we feel like it's very important. It's an obligation that we have in our commitment to equity to make sure that students have opportunities both in their learning experiences as well as in these assessment experiences to be able to have hands-on time with technology. I will tell you, our teachers, I was on a panel just a few weeks ago, our teachers have a lot of concerns around. We have had this big investment. It's not nearly enough. And in terms of thinking about the amount of technology that's available both for instructional purposes as well as assessment purposes, I think as a district, it's a place where we're going to continue to invest because we understand the importance of that.
Yep.
Did you have a follow-up?
Was there a follow-up, Elaine? Didn't mean to cut you off. No?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
And in terms of, I think there was also a question Bruce was just whispering in my ear around our ability to look at growth data with PARC. You know, one of the things I think is incredibly commendable about our state is our growth model. We have been very fortunate, for example, when we changed from the CELA test to the ACCESS test, two completely different tests, measuring similar things but not the exact same things, to be able to get a growth measure. We are very, I think, hopeful that we will be able to see what growth looks like across different assessments because we understand that that's a critical component of what we need.
Okay, now Dr. Shovel.
Thank you. I wonder if Keith and Susanna could respond to this question, anybody else. It seems like there's a premise out there that common standards and common assessments are necessary to even the playing field, that some of the high-achieving districts and students may not need that, but certainly the low-achieving students and districts do. Can you speak to that assumption and how it plays out in your experience? I know that's kind of an underlying assumption that's rarely really addressed head-on, and I wonder if you could speak to that, both panelists.
Sure. We absolutely believe in the value of common standards and common assessments, and truthfully, it's because I think as a nation, we have a very poor track record of ensuring that our students of color, our students from poor families, our students with limited opportunities in their home life have access to high-quality experiences and those same standards. Part of the reason why we are so committed to the idea of common assessments and the common standards and the assessments that are built around those standards is because it really is important that we have valid information about how our students are doing, and not students who are getting grades that look like an A in one part of town and an A in another part of town, or a score in one state compared to a score in another state. We believe it's very important. The research is very clear that increasing standards for students who are at risk is the right thing to do, that students rise to the expectations, and the idea of having higher standards through these standards, we believe is very important.
So you, in your experience, you've seen that to work?
We absolutely have. And in fact, when you look at the progress that we've been able to make in the Denver Public Schools, it's very much based on the idea that we are deeply committed to understanding the standards, to creating learning environments and teaching opportunities for students to meet those. Have we solved everything? Certainly not. And it's one part of it, along with, as we've said before, innovation, making sure we've got excellent leaders and teachers in our buildings. I think another benefit with the Common Core is it. We just are in the process of doing reviews of materials, mostly from publishers, many of them with the stamp that says aligned to the Common Core. And what I would say is, like, buyer beware. And frankly, I think that it actually will give us an opportunity to have more teacher developed, both across the state and across the nation, resources to meet the expectations of the standards. I don't think that the publishers have caught up to the expectations, quite frankly. And so I don't see this turning into a national curriculum movement by any stretch.
Senator King.
I would just say it depends on whether you view the standards as aspirational or whether you view them as minimal. And I think the reality is that human behavior, when given opportunities to actualize potential, far exceed what is ever asked of them. And I'll give you a good example. I remember when Jim Ryan ran a 4-minute mile, and we thought, wow, what an accomplishment. That's the first time it's ever been. Today, it's nothing. The standard is so low that everybody, you don't go anywhere with that standard today. And I'm afraid what we have, even though we have some schools that are struggling to meet those standards, that is not aspirational for so many kids. It might be benchmarking, but it puts us at a level that we say all kids are at this level and can achieve. And I think what we sacrifice is human excellence and human aspiration to do better than what the standards are. And I know the idea of some schools is to be a year or two ahead of the standards just to try and give the kids who can do better an opportunity to do much more than what they are doing. And so I worry that for us preparing kids for Dr. Jordan's college and a university now is going to be some it will help. But I think in general, I think the aspirations are too low.
Is this an appropriate time to make a statement, or are we still questioning?
Let's run through your questions, and we'll come back to statements.
And if I could just add on to that quickly, the reason, again, I think PARC is so critical towards that equity issue is what we saw under No Child Left Behind when we had this states with 50 different standards is that states magically started to close the achievement gap and look like they were really making great accomplishments for those children. And in fact, what was happening is they were dumbing down the test and they were weakening the assessment. And it was later exposed that they had not made those achievement gains. The test had just gotten easier. That will not be possible under PARC because the state will not have the flexibility to do that, and we'll know. And so that's where that comparability across multiple states will become very valuable.
Okay. Questions down this way? Angelica? No? Pam, go ahead.
Taking off of what you just said, Mr. Hoyt, my concern is that it also takes away our ability. If we don't like PARC, or if we find it doesn't work, it's not adequate, we are so far away from where the standards are being devised, where what's being we won't have any power to change them. That's my greatest concern right now, is that we are too far removed. I know I'm talking to parents daily, even school board members, who are outraged at what they see coming into their schools as curriculum, and who do they talk to? Who do they complain to? They can't go to their school board and complain because PARC is too far away to remove from them. What do you say to that? What happens if we don't like what happens with PARC? How do we affect change?
And I'll let other panels weigh in. Again, PARC is the assessment tool. I think the concern is to the standards, right? What if we don't like the standards? And my understanding is that you have done some marvelous work on developing those standards, and all PARC is doing is that's the tool that's going to align the assessment to those very standards. So I think the question is, am I wrong that you're worried about curriculum and the standard? What if these aren't the right standards that we're being held to? And you know, I'll let others weigh in on what they think about that.
How about you, Mr. Bowman? Do you believe that standards drive curriculum?
Yes, I do. And I like the fact that in the past, we had the standards and teachers and principals and schools could address those standards in their most unique and creative and innovative ways, depending on the clientele of the student body. Typically, what gets tested gets taught. I don't like that. And so that bothers me to some degree, and I try to encourage our teachers, don't pay attention to the test. Pay attention to the standards and address the standards in your creative and unique ways. And so I just feel like more and more we're seeing testing driving instruction versus the other way around. And so I don't know if that answers your question, but that's kind of how I feel about it.
Can I make one comment on that, just from a higher education perspective? I mean, let me just give an example. Within our curriculum, in our departments, the faculty create a set of learning outcomes for every course. It's a standard set of learning outcomes, regardless of who's teaching the course. That's the outcomes for that course. But we will see faculty absolutely vary how they go about doing it. So I've got some faculty who will say, I'm going to teach it strictly with flipped classrooms, and we're going to spend the time, you're going to take all this stuff home and it's going to be delivered by technology, and you're going to learn that theory there, and then we're going to spend the time in the classroom doing it this way, talking about the issues. Other faculty are much more on the lecture mode. The issue is, did they come to the same outcome with respect to the student when they were able to demonstrate the outcome that was expected? And I think that's a great way of looking at that there's a standard, but you can deliver that, achieve that a lot of different ways. And I don't think you're limited in your creativity about how you deliver that.
Okay. Senator King.
I would just like to agree with that. I think the assessment can be totally different than the outcome. And I'll give you a good example. It was legislation that Dr. Jordan probably really likes, GT Pathways, which standardized the 31 semester hours of college curriculum across the state of Colorado. It has a common syllabus. It has a common theme. But it has, you can individualize your assessments. You can do whatever you want to measure the outcomes that you have, and those are comparable and they've proven to be extremely successful. I carried that legislation in 2001, and it's worked out extremely well. That is a framework of a standard but it gives an opportunity for a tremendous amount of individualization and opportunities at all the different institutions to accomplish what they want to accomplish.
Well, where I would slightly differ with you is that there is a statewide group that goes and looks and sees that makes the assessment about whether the courses are equivalent or not.
Correct. Correct.
It's controlled curriculum. But they don't have a common assessment. Jane.
Yes. A couple of that could be yes or no answers. Ooh, could be. Across the range of you, the word pilot was used and the word pilot, P words, pilot, park. I'm wondering if when, Mr. Bauman, when you talked about the pilot, if you could see the pilot going on now, are you talking about literally a pilot of the standards? Because we've had several districts piloting the implementation through several means. One of them's been our integration pilots. But we've also, right now, are wrapping up phase one of, at least, practice tests for the PARC segment of our state assessment system. So we're talking only about math and language arts practice tests. It's not a only because we are using both words in really kind of two parallel parts of our lives here. That, you know, we can talk about that. And I guess I would ask, any reference to the PARC tests and a claim here and a claim there or a descriptory statement or something, any relation to the PARC test, it's coming to me as though you are talking about the actual exam, which is not out there yet, but could be referring to sample items that are single or a series of single items that kids are working with now. Because the PARC test itself, and what I really, not to avoid any use of the word, but it is really our state assessment system, our exams in math and language arts is what we're talking about here, is not in for another year. And then a statement, and then I'll let them respond to that. When we talk about what's going on in other states and results from such, and we've all heard, kept up on the current events and the current public activity around all of these things, New York, Kentucky, Tennessee, Utah was mentioned, recently Kansas. None of those states have given PARC tests. Those are states that chose to, they may or may not be members of either consortia, but they have decided that they would develop their own state exams in those two content areas for not to use the consortia's exams, they're developing their own. In all but one, there have been reports of glitches, mostly related to technology. There have been reports of delays being necessary in order to analyze, to take the time and have the expertise and the tools you need just to use the tools. So I think that we all would do ourselves a favor if we really help each other understand that when other states are talking about the tests, it's not the consortia developed tests. The pilot or practice test part of our lives right now is what is going to, and there's good feedback available coming in from all the states. 15 million students have been involved in this practice session. But there's good feedback coming in about the technology and the glitches and the literally how the questions appear on the screen and what kids have suggested. All grade levels have been given a chance to have live interviews with folks after the test session is over. So the kids are giving great feedback about the physical part, the physical qualities of the test, the on-screen appearance, the arrangement, the how it works for them, and if it does work. So I'm just saying, that would be what I feel would be helpful to me and probably to everybody. If we were square on what exactly we're talking about when we use certain terms and contexts, Senator King, I cannot disagree with you on everything you said around opening up the opportunity for, if we're talking true standards-based education, we're talking about the ability to move when ready, to step back when necessary, to adjust the whole methodology and the approach to what kids learn. I spend quite a bit of time with the GT parent community and students, but as long as I've been involved with them, that's been a plea, and I find it to be a very valid point. I think it's something that we all need to be reminded of all the time, that one of the really beauties of standards-based learning, if it's being applied as it for that purpose, is to allow movement with as few restrictions and limitations as possible. It's our whole thing around competency versus seat time and mastery, and being able to show that. So I think through our studies and our continued research and our looking at how things work and it develops, I believe we have to give a lot of consideration to how can we use whatever system we have to be able to open the doors for those kinds of things, and interventions as well, to make it more as flexible as possible.
What was your question?
Restate the question.
It's okay.
Oh, you know, I don't know.
The subject and the predicate. Yes.
Thank you for listening, and that's all.
She snuck a statement in earlier.
Everything's all in there.
Angelica, question.
Well, actually, that was helpful because you just laid the groundwork for my question.
There we go. That was context for this question.
That was context, and which is, I believe you had the benefit of a assessment conversation that we had here either last month or the month before about the fact that our assessments don't work in a standards-based kind of a system. You see that for your students. Adams 50 is a completely standards-based system. So my question to you is, are you thinking that we should be having end-of-course assessments at the high school level? What are the kinds of ways to do this differently? I think we've talked before a lot about the fact that, first of all, maybe the balance is off, but also the structure, especially when we get to the high school level, perhaps needs to be looked at in order to make it in order to get the information, but also to make it very, very meaningful and timely. I think that's what I heard you say.
Right, and I think the last year I was in the legislature, I tried to get the Accuplacer test to be something that we make available. I hope it's still ongoing across every school district in the state of Colorado, because that actually is an assessment that gives kids, they should be taking that if they're not, when once they get into ninth grade, they should start saying, what do I need to work on to be ready to go on to college and be successful at college? They need to take that every year until they are college ready and can demonstrate that they have the abilities to do that. It's a benchmarking to help them understand what is necessary for some success at the college level. I think if we can do those types of things, if they can buy into the ACT test and see that it makes a difference when they go on to college to get a good grade on that, they will put meaning into it. But the problem with the PARC that's going to be the way we're adding PARC at the high school level, where we're going to be sorely disappointed with the amount of effort that these kids put into this test. But
right,
if we,
but I don't think we're on the same page here.
Okay,
I thought I heard you say that your kids just kind of go ahead. The Accuplacer is kind of a different thing, and it's not a Colorado-based Colorado standards-based assessment. I'm talking about how do we ensure that we're assessing kids in the various subject areas when they have learned the material in that area.
Well, what we do
is... And then move on to advanced calculus or something like that.
Well, we build the framework that we build for is in English and math to go on to college, and we really concentrate on that. And then as they test into the ability to do college work, we put them into college courses.
So you have separate assessments for courses?
Yes, we have these separate. We use the Accuplacer to assess them immediately when they come into the school.
Right.
And
but as they progress throughout,
they're taking the college level assessments because we're taking college level courses.
Do you see those as being a substitute for, or We talk about flexibility assessments. Do you see those as being appropriate accountability assessments instead of in 11th grade?
Well, I think what we're trying to
do, the 11th grade math.
Our goal with high school is to prepare them for college so that they can be successful in college. And if we have them being successful in college, I think they're demonstrating that they have the ability to do college-level work and they can be successful in doing that work. And so they really are making that transition from being a high school student to a college student and doing the college-level curriculum and the work that's necessary to be successful in college. So that's what we're trying to accomplish and achieve, and the kids can do it if they're given an opportunity.
So, final question, and the way it's timing out, we're probably going to move not through follow-up questions, but to a conversation among the board and tie it off with that. So, point of personal privilege, I am never disappointed when people of goodwill step into a room to talk about how we can improve education and what we need to be doing for the students of Colorado. I'm so grateful that you all took the time to be here. This has been a very interesting and helpful conversation. Because I don't have time to get into the 53 questions I have here, the details. I'm going to come back to a very high-level conversation about principle, and Dr. Jordan, you raised it, in this conversation about responsibility to the country is essentially the way you characterized it. Justice Louis Brandeis said that he, I forget the exact quote, but I'm going to say he loved the fact that we had 50 laboratories for democracy around this country. And I think to some extent, and this is not a conversation, I don't want to speak about standards, I'm speaking specifically to assessments here. This conversation of 50 laboratories, not only for democracy, but for education. You seek to improve the situation for all students across the country by virtue of driving into consensus in a room around a collective conversation. I would argue the best way to get where we truly both of us want to get, it is a question, it would be to...
You would argue?
Would be, yeah, exactly. To lead by example, to say, you know what, we're going to take and build something that is... In fact, others will be drawn to, as opposed to everyone is forced into. The question is, why would you choose to lead by consensus as opposed to lead by example in your original statement?
I'm waiting for this answer.
Well, it's just the age-old question about how a country moves itself forward, right? I mean, and people can have reasonable differences of opinion. I think it is, for me, it's because this, to me, is the number one national priority. If our country is going to compete successfully, we have to change what we're doing. And I think that what you're proposing is what in the literature of public policy is called successive limited comparisons, that you put together a whole series of opportunities and you compare them, and then you make some change relative to that.
Sure.
And what I'm proposing is this, what they would call the rational comprehensive model, that a group of people get together and create what they think is the most rational system and in a wholesale way try to move that forward in order to get the maximum gain as quickly as you possibly can. I think what you propose has, on the short term, less risk about disruption. Because it does have, again, it's limited to, the disruption is limited to those who choose to go out there.
Yes.
I think what I propose has the greatest opportunity for significant gain in a short period of time. And the question I think that we're facing is, how much time do we really have in order to solve this problem? Given that at least how quickly we see the world not only catching up but surpassing us. In educational attainment. I think that's really the crux of the argument that, or the debate that we're having here today, and I would sort of put them in those two models.
Fair enough. A very responsive answer. Thank you for that. So with that, we'll tie off questions, and I will open the floor to comments from
thank
board
you. I've
members.
Been waiting very
patiently.
There's a reason that I sit in the middle of this group. I chose it purposely. To the three of you, Dr. Jordan and Mr. Hoyt, and I greatly admire Colorado Succeeds. They're one of my favorite groups. I agreed with everything you said, but I kept thinking, but why does it have to be PARC? You're talking about measurement. You know, I agree with all those things, but I'm going, but you never gave us a good reason why Park would be the one to do that. And to you three people, I totally agree that you probably, and I know your schools do very well, but I'm sorry, Ted, I don't buy leave us alone, because we have left so many schools alone and gotten very bad results. And of course, Keith, you were responsible for the accountability legislation, 193. So we have to hold kids accountable. I'm a retired teacher, and I came out of a high school that had a lot of wonderful, great kids, and a lot of those who were perfectly happy to graduate with a D. You know, that's all they were looking for. I got a grade point. So that is my big question, is why does it have to be Park? And I did, as I mentioned to a couple of you, I spent quite a bit of time last week talking to Utah, who is in the process of designing their own assessment. They have, and of course, she's not going to, you know, they're probably not going to go, this isn't working well. They're trying to tell you the things that are working well. But they have at the present time 3 90-minute tests, and they have with plus 2 writing prompts, one long and one short, at a cost, she tells me, of $19.50 per student, and computer adaptive assessment, so it adapts to the students. So that's sort of where I am. I'm just, you know, Park is so big and so huge and so. Do we really need something that big? I understand what you say about measuring against other states, but then all of them are not. You know, we've got this. We got Utah, and we have people who are doing smarter balance. So, and I'm sure many others will do their own thing. So, it's impossible really to say, well, Colorado's here, and so, you know. I'm very much in favor of assessing our students and for growth, and we need to know that. I'm just not at all convinced that it has to be Park. I think it could be something else that would be our own, that hopefully would be a little less expensive. And you know, Utah did the same thing. They've been in this process for several years, so it wasn't like they said, "Oh, throw that one out and get a new one." They took what they already had, and they wrote the assessment. They hired a company to do all of the other stuff, and they just took the. When did they withdraw? They withdrew in
Utah 12.
Utah 12. So they withdrew from Park for balance. Political
smarter
reasons.
They were
smarter balance.
And
it's just been 2 years, and I mean, I'm not saying they're perfect, because you know everybody kind of pitches that, but it surely sounded like a good process to me. So, thank you guys, for coming and doing this. Has been a great conversation. I really appreciate it.
So I think I might have made an administrative mistake. It's probably appropriate for us to consider, because we've got 2 agenda items here, to consider the panel session concluded. I would ask if you're willing to stay. We won't be talking for more than 4 or 5 hours, I promise. Feel free to stay. But the panel discussion portion of our agenda, as published for today, is concluded, and we're actually moving to a board action item. So with that, I would reopen the floor for comments.
I thought you did ask for comments.
I did, but I didn't make it clear that I'd move to another agenda item. So
thank you.
You may go if you need to go, please.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for the opportunity. We really
appreciate it. Thank you.
So, other comments. Angelica.
I'll try some, but I'm not sure I'll finish the first time around. Why Park should be the assessment is one, I think, question that Marcia raises. I've got 4 pages of names of Colorado people who have participated in the development of Park.
Okay.
I think this is, I admit that when I voted to develop our own 4 years ago, that was one of my concerns, that we would not have a voice.
2 years ago?
That we would not have a voice.
12. Go ahead.
In the development, and of course, I was wrong, completely wrong. We have teachers from Mesa School District, from Mesa University, Fort Lewis College. Nobody from Lewis Palmer, I'll admit, in looking at the list. But we've had tremendous participation. I'm very uncomfortable saying this was a worthless effort on those, for those people. I do believe, and particularly based on some of the questions that I've been shown, that this really is, has had a lot of caller input. The example that I have is that what's unique to Colorado math standards is that we incorporated the personal finance. That's a, that was a portion, that that was a piece that was our own, that were our own. And by golly, if there aren't personal finance questions in the math section of PARC. So I believe we've been heard, and there's been a certain amount of tailoring. And in fact, we have permission, if we find that there are pieces of our standards that are not being covered, we have permission to ultimately add those as we go forward. Another problem that's been discussed, we heard it here today, and it is a huge problem, and that is the adequacy of technology in our schools. But you know what? That's just a bleeping crime that we have inadequate technology. I think this board should be taking a leadership in that issue, because our kids, when they leave school, most of them are using technology. We have the tail wagging the dog right now by saying that we need better technology in order to do the assessments, when the reality is our kids should be spending some of their time learning, being connected to kids in other, and to opportunities in other states, in other countries, etc. We've done a very poor job both with the broadband and with the resources for the technology. This is where we should be leaders in pushing the legislature, if they have one-time money, for example, clearly identifying what kind of technology is really good, how much time really is appropriate. To suggest that our kids should be taking paper and pencil tests, I got to ask myself, do I have a pencil in my purse that I carry around with me? I don't even have a pencil on my desk anymore. No one in the business community uses a pencil. We're talking about preparing our kids for the 21st century with 19th century tools. And that's just criminal.
But who's asking us to take paper and pencil
tests? Lots of people are asking us to take pencil and paper tests. And we're actually talking about it because we don't have the technology. It's just a huge problem. And I will acknowledge it. Nevertheless, it isn't a reason to get out of PARC. In fact, if we had developed our own assessments, they were also going to be online assessments. So that's not a problem that's solved at all in any other way. Data privacy has been a real concern that I've heard from a lot of folks, and I think it should be. We haven't, not we, the board members of PARC have a written agreement that PARC will not own any student data, that the testing data, the student information will all be held in Colorado, and it will not be shared. I want you to know that that's completely different than the ACT. The ACT, Aspire, all those folks do collect data on our kids when they use those, when they take the assessments. They keep that data, and they're free to do with it whatever they wish. So this is actually a more private data testing system than what we're doing for our kids today. I'm in total agreement that we have a problem with too much testing, the wrong structure of testing. We've talked about this. We need to get smarter about how much we assess. We need to try to keep it closer to the classroom. Again, technology is a huge piece of this. We're undermining our desire to have a standards-based system where kids can move at their own rate by not by developing the kind of assessments we have. I recognize that. That's not a reason to leave PARC. It's a reason to help to work with other states to change PARC, to change our overall assessment system, to figure out what accountability do we really need? Haven't we gone overboard? How can we pull that back? It's a challenge. I recognize that. But I want to point out one piece of PARC that I find very compelling. For the last umpteen years, I've heard teachers say the kinds of assessments that we should be giving our students are performance assessments. That's how we know if they've really learned it. It's not about the bubble. It's about demonstrating what you know and are able to do. PARC actually has performance assessments. This is what everybody's been asking for all these years. And it's kind of strange that we should suddenly be talking about no longer having that or dismissing that. And they are very difficult to develop, and they're pretty expensive as well. Some people worry incorrectly that private money has been a part of the development. I believe Paul had that in his monologue last time. There's been no private money in the development of Park. It's a federal grant. And I know that bothers people, but I got to tell you, next week, I'm sending a bunch of money to the IRS, to the feds, and I don't feel bad if for the greater good some of that money serves Colorado's teachers and kids. This is public money. It's not about some federal odd thing. This is public money that I really think should go to the benefit and betterment for our kids. I think it's already been pointed out. I really appreciated the entire panel. This side was the tough implementation, the real hard challenges. This was the vision over here. And I know that some of that's pretty hard. But one of the things that Dr. Jordan pointed out, that we simply don't have time or resources to be developing new assessments next year, which is why this really doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I have to say, I've been watching this weird commercial since I've watched TV again now that ball games are on. There's a commercial, a car commercial, where everybody goes backwards, right? Everybody runs backwards. The cars drive backwards. You know what I'm talking about because you're watching the games. That's what this feels like. We're going backwards. Some of us started in 2009, 2010. We did a ton of things, 163, 191, content standards, everything. Since 2011, there's been this push to go back and to go back. And maybe that's how progress happens, but it's really, really hard. What I learned this month after Paul's presentation is that our districts are really, really upset with us. They're thankful for the work that happens at CDE, but they are really ticked off that we are not just moving forward, that they have been working like crazy. I've had superintendents actually bring me in. They've been working like crazy to implement the new assessments, to implement the new standards, to prepare for the assessments. Now they want to know, Angelica, what are you doing? What's going to be there? That's my final comment.
Comments from this side? Elaine, you want to go next?
Yeah, let's mix it up.
Mix it up.
Dr. Scheffel? Yeah, go ahead.
I really appreciate the discussion. I thought the panelists were very helpful in helping us think through the various facets of this issue, and I know the board has some good, robust discussion as well. And I guess from my perspective, I would just say, as a longtime educator and a person that's been involved in education from the macro level to the micro level in classrooms, when we have a federally funded entity like PARC or Smarter Balanced or any other entity writing items that define language and standards, we just legitimize a tremendous federal influence over what students are taught and how learning is assessed. And based both on research and experience in public education classrooms, I think that's the wrong approach to influencing increases in student achievement for all students in Colorado and for the nation as a whole. And so I just think that we all are interested in raising student achievement. We're all interested in closing achievement. That gaps question, is this the right approach to doing that? And I think when we look at experience and research, I don't think it is.
Lane?
Well, I will reiterate that I thought all six panelists were excellent. So I thought this was a very good way to hear a number of different perspectives. I also agreed with Angelica's description of this side of the room focused on implementation. This looked more at the bigger picture. And I'm really thinking about where we agree and where we don't agree. And I think where we don't agree the most is this notion of that Colorado should develop its own assessments, that we're closer to the schools, and that we know best. That's what I've heard from you, Paul, and I heard from Marcia, and I think I heard from Deb. Is that correct, Deb? And I'll assume you feel the same way.
It's a piece of the argument.
Go ahead. Yeah. Personally, I wouldn't mind if we did the Iowa basics.
Well, that's something. You really want to go back.
I mean, some national assessment is fine with me.
And I guess I better keep going. And I guess I'm really, really struggling with that. And I'm struggling with it not because I in any way agree, because I don't, because it's like, how can we be so arrogant to think that we have the best minds in Colorado and there are no good minds outside of Colorado that can help develop a really strong assessment?
That's a false premise.
Well,
it's not arrogance.
What is it?
It's not that we don't appreciate what other states might have to offer.
Uh-huh.
It's just that we don't want to hand over all of the control to feds.
Okay, hold on a second. This is not your part of the meeting. This is our part of the meeting.
This is not who claps the most.
So, yeah. So this is Greg.
Don't hit me.
No. I love you.
You're getting a little loose there.
No. I want to point out that we are not giving up control, that our commissioner, who all seven of us, I believe, highly respect, we keep renewing his contracts, so I'll assume we highly respect him. Well,
we let that
you're
go.
Still here, from year to year. The commissioner is a member of the executive committee. I don't think he's a pushover. I have tried several times unsuccessfully. So I think he is a strong voice at the table. So I in no way truly believe that we have given up our control or a seat at the table. We've heard a number of times that there have been at least 50 different educators from Colorado that have participated in the development of PARC. So on that notion, I just plain disagree. And I've spoken many times in the past that I truly believe that we need to be looking at the whole United States and not be so parochial just to think about Colorado. And I don't want to say anything bad about the past, but I'm going to, because I can't make my case without doing it. Colorado was not known in the past for having the strongest standards, and we developed our test, our CSAPs and our TCAPs, to measure against those standards, which the Fordham Institute always rated pretty average. There were always states that had higher, that had more rigorous standards than ours, like Massachusetts. So I have no reason to believe, with all the brilliant people we have here, that we're going to do a better job now than we've did in the past. And that is no diss to the members of the Department of Education or the teachers, the educators of Colorado. I think all tides rise when you put heads together and you're able to work together. So that's one point. We've talked a lot, and I heard this from the former superintendent, and I think he made some really good points, and I'm really sorry he's not here to
receive his accolades.
To hear my thoughts on this. We do have too much testing, and there's a burden of testing we have in the state of Colorado. And I know there is a bill before the legislature to form a task force to look at it. I think as leaders of public education in the state, Mr. Chair, if you were to agree, I think we should ask the commissioner to come back to us in the next month or two, take the West Ed information. You've got great staff. You heard from Mr. Bauman. You've got Elliot Asp. We've got Jill. We've got a lot of great people. Could you please come back to us and make some recommendations about how we can decrease the burden of testing and perhaps even decrease the amount of testing? I think PARC is getting the blame for a lot of that, which is completely outside of our control, because all the testing we're doing now is required by state statute. It's by the READ Act. It's by the Accountability Act. It's by all of those. It's not coming from the State Board of Education. There's not one test that is mm-hmm. coming from the State Board of Education. So even though we will not be able to unilaterally make those decisions, if it's okay with you, I'd like the commissioner to come back and make some specific recommendations. Can you respond to that before I finish my comments?
Sure. Absolutely. The testing burden is one of the problems. We are losing a greater control, or we're losing control over an entire aspect of upcoming testing burden as we accede to PARC. So I don't think I would completely agree with that. Yes, we should do that, but it's a separate issue in terms of.
I agree it's a separate issue. However, I think sometimes other people meld them together. Okay, so that's
fine.
So there,
yes,
you got
you have
that one.
A friendly okay. voice or friendly ear on that.
The last point. The last point I have to make, which is less important, but I need to get it on the record, and Cindy's gone. And this was something Cindy said.
Cindy's right here.
She's right
front
there.
Row.
Oh, good. Thank you. I'm only looking this far. I have to say this. You please don't respond. I'm just going to make a comment. You did refer to the American Academy of Pediatrics, which always gets me alive because my husband's a pediatrician and is a former president of the American Academy of Pediatrics. So I know all their policies, and it's a very highly respected group, and I concur with their policy about screen time. I will also say that it is the role of the parent to make sure that their student, their child, is not spending too much time in front of a computer. And that, so that's one piece. And on the other side of that, and Angelica talked about this as well, we need to be graduating students that are computer literate. I know that my sons do everything on the computer. They look up research projects, they read law journals, they every single thing they do is on the computer. And we would be failing our students if they were not completely computer literate and were not able to take tests on the computer. So, the end.
Fair enough. Jane, and Pam, and then I guess I'll wrap this up. We're getting close.
Well, I said a lot of it earlier, so thank you for indulging me then. A few things now. I think... If Dr. Jordan were here, I'd probably ask him to elaborate a little bit on his views around the connection between whatever state assessment we have and the fact that and students' outlook on it, especially high school students who, by all justification over the last several years, have been able to say, "What good is this doing me? Why should I be looking at my senior year springtime or my junior year?" Lots of other things to do, and I'm sitting in a 2 or 3 hour multiple session for no reason. You can't blame them for being a little teenagery during those times. But I do think that along with these really important discussions and conversations and decisions, there are some other things that are happening concurrently, and I mean no pun when I use that word, but the idea of concurrent activity that is a supplement and support to other activities. There is coming up, it's public now, but it's not ready to go into full effect for a while, so it's not on our top radar. Pretty significant major changes in our remediation policies, higher ed remediation, post-secondary, and in the admissions process. And all of that is work that is part of the overall alignment of PE20, or early childhood through post-secondary graduate level. And I know, for me as a former teacher in high school that went through the original period when we were saying, what in the heck is higher ed doing? Why is it so hard to communicate? To understand what it is they're looking for in helping high school students transition with some and the university or wherever they went, some appreciation for what they knew how to do. There was no connect. So when this all transpired and came into our auto life, I was very happy, and I know a lot of my colleagues were. The remediation changes will actually be factors in making individualized, customized to student situation and experience and background credit that will allow them to be placed in appropriate ways that will not only catch them up, whatever that may mean, but also allow them to take things at the same time, still keep moving ahead. It's a money saver, it's a spirit saver, there's a lot of advantages to that. Admissions policies. Tied in with what is going to become our new graduation guidelines, which also includes some great work by this board with in cooperation and conversation with the Higher Ed Commission, where we have Colorado now has what's called an endorsed diploma, which allows for various other activities in other content areas, in addition to the fact that the list of assessments or placement exams, college-ready exams, is going to be expanded. This past season, PARC and Smarter Balance specifically were added to the list of considerations for admission. So when I get a chance to tell parents this and students that this is all going to be included now, it will be more of a point obvious to you and your family about the importance of this test or others that you choose or that your district is using. So I see no reason to stop PARC, because I am of the mind, too, that this is not the real, this is not the crux of our problem. We are working hard, thanks to many of you who have spent lots of really great time talking with us and coming here and giving comments. We've learned a lot. I think we're going to be able to do a lot of things in a more refined manner for better advantage to kids because of our conversations. I do think our administration of it, our implementation, the mechanics, the logistics is something we have to figure out. We've got to do something about it. The content of these exams, we've got people that have worked on this for years. In fact, I've got the list Angelica has. I don't have it with me. It's 4 pages long of Colorado classroom teachers, higher ed individuals, our experts here at the department, in the institutions, folks on the ground who do live Colorado education who have been working on this. They've also done bias checks and trained. So we do have control over the future of our state test, which is what PARC is. It is our state test, and we are we're looking at it that way. If you, if we let our study proceed, we really talk to schools after the practice test periods are complete. I intend to talk to kids, students. I know that's part of the feedback for PARC as well, and we proceed. We don't have the time. We don't have the money to do all the processes that are involved in creating our own test. It takes a lot longer than a year. We can look at that after we have given the great work going on now a chance to get to a point where it's fair to really stop and look at it again. So, thank you.
Thank you, Jane. Pam?
I think I speak for many parents and taxpayers in my district when I say that I agree with George Will. I think that federal government is not supposed to be involved in our education systems in the states, and I think this is the, as George Will said, the thin edge of a giant wedge. There may be parts of this that are good. I am opposed to this because it opens the door to more federal intrusion, and I don't think that's a good thing.
Can I, so Pam and I are, we had some rather long statements. Could I add something on here?
Brief statement.
Just a couple of comments from, you know, the earlier. I know, Angelica, that some districts are not happy with this, but I also know that some districts are expressing big concerns about doing this. We've gotten the email there, how much time they're going to have to close their labs. And, you know, there are a lot of districts out there that are really hesitating and going, do we really want to do this? So I think we need to remember that. And then, and Pam, you know, we know that we are a political board and that some people have more faith in federal government and they're in than some others do. I particularly think back when special ed was in 1973, and the federal government promised to pay 40% of the cost. if we would, you know, special ed's a good thing, but they're going to pay 40% of the cost. They have never paid 40%. At the present time, I checked this year, at the present time they're paying 10%. So the national committee, their education, they came up with this proposal that they should give them more money. And I'm thinking, no, you should say we're going to do 30% less because you're not paying your bill. And that's you go into something like this, and I totally agree. I mean, I am all for assessment. I think we have to assess our kids. We have to know where they are. But I just don't have any faith in the federal government that they won't expand it, that there won't be something out there that they want us to do that next year, 2 years from now, or that they ever will pay their share. So I just had to add that little bit because of the comments before.
Okay, quick comment.
Just let me clarify this, and I can't believe you said, sure. You just said that we would do 30% less for our at-risk kids.
I didn't say that. The committee in Washington said 30% less.
The $186 million went to the Park Consortium. The feds had nothing to do with the development of the test. All they asked for was an acknowledgement or a reckoning of the money that was being spent.
I understand that.
Okay, but I think people are saying that the feds created this test.
No, the feds funded this test.
Fair enough. So let me respond to a couple of the issues that have been raised with regard to Colorado participation in the four sheets of paper. It's good that we have had participation in this, and the more vigorous that participation has been to this point, I think is more condemning to the situation in which we find ourselves. It says clearly that the inertia of federal, regional, and other states has not been able to get us where we potentially want to be, to a more concise, more productive test. So that would be, please, that's my argument. Then to the question of, to say Colorado controlled, designed, and developed, in my mind, when I say Colorado controlled design, that's not to say that you have to pass a residency test in order to participate in the development and of this. I'm talking about the ownership. The people of Colorado, the governing bodies of Colorado, the elected officials of Colorado have authority over it. And I believe that the way this is structured, it's slipping. We don't have the control that I would prefer we have. So on to a few points that I mean, you were so, all of you, so gracious in listening to my droning statement last month. I will try and limit my comments today, but there are a few key points, and they can be summarized in. There's a cost problem associated with PARC. There's a time problem associated with PARC. There's a loss of instructional focus, and I would say a corollary issue to that, there's a loss of, I want to call it policy focus associated with PARC. And there, in my mind, there clearly is federal overreach today. We heard there's a significant service problem associated with PARC. And so let me go back and just kind of give you the high levels, and I promise no 10-minute droning speech today. But with regard to cost, PARC creates for us, for the state of Colorado, a forward-looking financial burden that cannot yet be estimated or controlled. And here's the problem. There's a business reality associated with what's going on. The participation in PARC has continued state by state by state to fall. It's gone from 22, if my numbers are correct, to 15. The estimated cost of delivery of the test today is $35. Meanwhile, the AIR test in Utah is coming in at $19.50. As the number of participating states in the consortia declines, the marginal cost of delivering the test is going to increase. What that means, we don't know. But that's a bogey that's huge, and it's a financial burden we probably shouldn't be taking on. With regard to time, PARC consumes an unprecedented amount of student time. And I realize we already have a burden, Elaine, to your point. But this burden is going to expand. I don't want to say exponentially because that might be an overstatement, but clearly PARC is going to bring another 9.5 hours into the test. And we potentially have crossed, depending on which superintendent you talk to, they will say we have crossed the tipping point or we're at the tipping point for various districts. As we build out these testing windows for this expanded test, when do we cross that point? When is there, you know, not enough time in the day, not enough time left in the school year to do the instructional things you want to do as you build out these testing windows? And it's not just as simple as it takes 9.5 hours, we'll do that on, you know, one of our 9.5 hour days. It's these enormous windows that the districts are having to build in order to achieve it. Probably more important is, in my mind, what I would describe as the loss of instructional focus that this is driving. PARC is causing a redirection of focus and thought of educational leadership away from instruction and toward assessment. I mean, we're moving from the most important thing we know in the classroom is a great teacher providing a great interactive experience for the student, and we're moving from let's focus on that to moving to this. We've got this management metric deriving system device. Will create all sorts of information for us. We need to focus on making sure that system functions properly and gives us the feedback we want so we can more properly manage this educational system that we have. To the point of federal overreach, and I do tend to agree with Marcia, the creation of a ponderous, highly centralized testing regime that is controlled outside the state of Colorado already, I believe, is beginning to distort our ability to promote Colorado initiatives. And this comes back to the point that I was making earlier, this loss of policy focus. Serve is an issue that I really hadn't even picked up on until today. And I was, quite frankly, aghast as I was listening to Superintendent Bauman talk about the fact that they can't get calls back, that they're not being responded to. And that was separate, his comments, not to misrepresent his comments, were separate and distinct from CDE. Very positive praise for what's happening within the state, but he was condemning, I think, in fairly round terms, the response coming back from the testing organization itself. As the controlling apparatus over anything, but specifically this assessment, gets further from the service user, especially when it's a governmentally driven organization, it becomes less and less responsive. And I think it's very important that we keep control of the key points of education as close to the students as possible, because that's where we're going to give a higher level of service. So it's for those reasons, others that we've talked about, I talked about at length, that I bring to you a motion at this point, and I would call for a question, or I call for this motion.
Everybody else, okay. I move to request that the second regular session of the 69th General Assembly restore the authority to the State Board of Education over statewide assessments by repealing during this legislative session 22-7-1006 1.5. In so doing, allow Colorado to withdraw as a governing member of PARC with the Colorado signatories to the MOU, rescinding that agreement with PARC, thereby allowing the board to direct the commissioner to develop an assessment aligned with Colorado academic standards for implementation in spring 2015.
Proper motion. Is there a second? Second down here, Dr. Scheffel. Staff, please call the roll.
Elaine Katz-Berman.
No.
Jane Goff.
No.
Paul Lindy.
Yes.
Hannah Masnick.
Yes.
Marcia Neal.
Yes.
Dr.
Scheffel? Yes.
Dr. Schroeder?
No.
And the motion carries. So, thank you. No, please, no demonstrations.
No.
Pardon me?
Break.
Break. Quick break, then we'll come back to public comment, I believe.